I can honestly say the number one thing I wish I would have done differently early on in our marriage was given him more grace and allowed him to make more mistakes. It's because you learn through your mistakes. And, you know, to have encouraged him more in how he was leading.
Erin Smalley joins us today to talk about having a vibrant marriage and ways that you can build up and encourage your husband. This is Focus on the Family, and your host is Focus President and author Jim Daly. I'm John Fuller.
John, I got a big old smile on my face. I think I'm going to really like this program. Encourage your husband.
Guys, you should know this is a great program for you in terms of outcomes.
That's right. This is a show about empowering wives to recognize the impact that you can make on your husband.
And Erin Smalley is a regular broadcast guest and serves as the program manager of Marriage Ministries here at Focus on the Family. And she's written her first book, 10 Things a Husband Needs from His Wife. And then joining us as well in the studio, Eva Daniel, one of our broadcast producers. And she and her husband, Jacob, have been married for 7 years. And then in our gallery, we have audience members, and we'll be taking some questions from them later on.
Well, let me say to both Erin and Eva, welcome.
Thanks.
Yep, great to be here.
We've torn you away from your normal day-to-day tasks to bring you into the studio. And Greg, your husband, Erin, has blessed you with about a dozen beautiful red roses and a card to congratulate you on your first solo book. Now, how do you feel about that?
Oh, it was a very nice surprise, and he's, you know, back in listening to everything I say. So.
Is he taking notes and going to correct you?
He's taking notes,
you know,
yes.
You should have said this. He's not going to do that, is he?
He's my biggest fan.
Well, one of the reasons you're both here is you're kind of living in different stages. Erin, you have older children now. Some off to college. Mm-hmm. And Eva, you've got a 5 and a 3-year-old at home. Two boys, by the way. I'm proud of you and Jacob. That's the way to go. You guys have two boys, and that's kind of wonderful, right?
It is. It's a very busy life season, though, as well. It's hard to, on this topic of marriage, it's hard to feel like we have a lot of time together. We both work and work flipped schedules and have little kids, and so it's kind of an exhausting season, as well as being fun.
Well, and that's true. So you're at the kind of the front end of that exhausting season. Sorry to tell you that.
And Erin's still exhausted.
Kind of,
I don't know.
I am getting to the point of happiness.
What, Eva, I hate to tell you, I'm still exhausted.
Doesn't get better.
Well, there's a truth right there.
Yeah, we have a married daughter who's 23, a 20-year-old in college, a 16-year-old son, and a 10-year-old daughter. Mm. So I have one in every single season of life, and so it does get a little crazy at times. And it kind of has never stopped.
Well, and that's, you know, so women are going, okay, so you understand my environment. Mm-hmm. Why 10 things I could do to meet my husband's needs? I've got so many other things to do, Erin. Why in the world did you write this book?
You know, I think that as women in general, we're pretty hard on ourselves. And we know we're supposed to be giving to our husbands. And yet when you have kids or jobs or careers, you're being pulled in so many directions. And yet I know in a woman's heart, she desires to be a good wife and desires to connect with her husband. And so really, these are just some simple truths that you can pull on to encourage your husband.
In the book, Erin, I'm going to turn quickly to you to answer this, Eva. But
okay.
Erin mentions this idea of self-care. And, you know, the number one thing is making sure you're healthy, because that seems to be, you know, spiritually, we obviously know that's the foundation. But that next important thing I think you're trying to stress, Erin, is being healthy, getting sleep, exercise. It keeps you buoyant even through difficulty. I just want to ask you, Eva, as a practitioner, is that an area that you can succeed in, or is it a struggle?
Well, reading your book, you had a scale in the book from 0 to 10 of how you would rank yourself, 0 being poor and 10 being doing well. I would give myself about a 3. I'm really good at sleeping, and I'm moderately okay on exercise. And it's one of those, I know what I should be doing, mm-hmm. but it often feels like by the time I get the kids down, I find myself standing in my kitchen at night, scrolling through social media, eating handfuls of their Halloween candy, going, what are you doing? Like, go work out, read your Bible, do something productive. And oftentimes it ends up watching Netflix, or it's hard for me at the end of the day to, I guess, make better, you know, self-care, which feels like a trendy word, but mm-hmm. better choices. It's hard for me to actually do that and to not just fall into bad patterns of eating lots of sugar and
see, there's the example
and,
right there.
And giving likes on Instagram. I don't know.
You give like, yourself
I
just, a three.
I know what I should do.
Hearing that description, if the guys would say, I'm an eight. I mean, I work out sometimes. I mean, that's an eight. That's the that's, difference yeah. between men and women.
Maybe I'm too hard on myself. I don't know.
But answer Eva's
and
question.
And I'm also not a morning person. And so my children usually wake me up. And so I don't necessarily get it in the morning either.
Mm-hmm. And what I would say is that what I've learned over through the seasons, especially during those busy, crazy seasons, I know that I cannot give to anyone if I am not well cared for. Even yesterday, Greg said, why don't you just stay home? You know, stay home from Bible study and, you know, you can get everything done that you need to get done before Thursday. And I said, you know what? I can't. I need to go to Bible study because that allows me to do what I need to do. You know, and I recently signed up to work out with a trainer, which has not been fun, I will say, because it's early mornings. It's not the time that I like to work out, but it's the time that I figured I could do it and I can fit it in. And I fight for that time because I know it will make a difference ultimately in how I show up in my marriage.
Well, it's so good. We've got to hit some of those harder issues. The most common things where husbands and wives will struggle. And you talk about that in the book, those frustrating things that a wife has to endure with their husband. So doing the research for the book, 10 Things a Husband Needs from His Wife, what were some of those things that women have to kind of take a deep breath and say, okay, I'll try to, you know, work with this. But what were those things that husbands do that really irritate their wives?
You know, especially when you start reading or hearing about differences and how different he is than we are, which is probably shocking to you. But often his differences will irritate, annoy us, frustrate us. And the truth is we have a choice in how we view those. And we can view those in a way that we can see them as a blessing. I know for Greg, he's so different than I am. Personality-wise, he's introverted. He's a slower pace. And I just, instead of seeing that as an issue or a problem, I have the opportunity to see that as a blessing, that he brings so much balance to my life.
Do you think, and I'd like both of you to answer this, we tend not to celebrate differences. And we've had one or two guests actually talk about that in that marriage space, maybe Gary Thomas and others. Why don't we, rather than it allowing it to irritate us, why don't we celebrate that and acknowledge some of those differences with a smile on our face rather than with a stern look of, why are you picking on me? Mm-hmm. Why is that?
Well, I mean, the way that I do life is the right way. And so, kidding. But I think,
I could be so bold.
But honestly, I think often we think that our way is the right way.
And I think our spouse thinks that.
Totally, we all do.
You do life the way that makes sense to you. Otherwise, hopefully, you wouldn't be doing it that way. And I know, at least for myself, I married an opposite, but I didn't realize how opposite we were until we got married. I still remember in premarital counseling, we did one of these extensive online tests, you know, to see all your compatibilities and points of conflict. And we were pretty comparable on everything, you know, finances, values, all these important things. And then it came to lifestyle, like just lifestyle differences. And I was a 99 and he was a 7 on this scale. It was just basically how you process life and what you do. And
how's that worked
out
for you?
And so, you know, well, it's been a little conflict along the way just because we do just how much energy we have or what we want to do or extrovert versus introvert, morning person versus night person. It's so fun when you're first getting together, and then now 7 years in, sometimes it really is frustrating.
Mm. And I would say the same thing is true for Greg and I. We took, you know, the premarital assessment, and we actually found that about 6 years ago before we moved here to Colorado as we were packing. And I remember when we took it, we were like, oh, this isn't true. We're not going to struggle in those areas.
We're much closer than
and
that.
As we found it 6 years ago, we were dying laughing because honestly, every single thing that came up that were going to be challenges, they've been challenges.
Right.
And it was right. And around dealing with finances and, you know, just our introvert, extrovert. And we have differences. But, you know, we often bump up against those and get into conflict over them. But I just really have tried to step back and recognize the beauty that the differences bring.
Aaron, let me ask you this. We've talked about the issues and the conflict, but what is the greatest predictor of marital satisfaction? Let's go to the answer.
Yeah, there was a study that Dr. Terry Orbach did, and it was a revolutionary study because she followed 373 couples for 22 years, which has never been done. And what she decided to do was to look at the happy couples So the couples that were succeeding, not, you know, often in studies, they look at what's going wrong, but instead she looked at what was going right for these happy couples. And what she found was that the women that were affirming their husbands, they found that those marriages had higher marital satisfaction. So it was super intriguing that simply affirming your husband can make a huge difference in his level of satisfaction in your
marriage. There's got to be more there. Come on. What else?
Isn't that that
was
truly,
that kind of the core thing?
Yeah, that was the biggest difference she found.
Okay, now I've got to ask you, though. Some women are going, that's so hard to do. Mm-hmm. You don't know my husband. Mm-hmm. So how does a woman who doesn't feel that respect for her husband turn that gear and say, I want a successful happy marriage. Mm-hmm. How do I get there emotionally and attitudinally to want to, celebrate my husband's stuff?
Yeah, I would say that what I would encourage her to do is to start watching. Start watching what he is doing instead of looking for what he's not doing. And as you do that, you're going to start seeing what you're looking for. And, you know, as you do that, you're going to start seeing things that he's probably been doing all along, but you haven't noticed it because you haven't been watching for it.
That's your two-part affirmation that you mentioned in the book. Describe that.
Yeah, you need to celebrate what you see in him. And tell him, you know, I see this in you. I see that you're a great
provider. Give
us an
example with you and Greg. Not to pry.
Oh.
But I need hardcore evidence.
You. I came home from work recently, and Greg was going to surprise me and make dinner. And I walked in, and I immediately saw the bag, the big Costco-sized bag of hash browns sitting on the counter. And I knew.
I like it already.
They had gone
hash browns
bad.
For dinner.
He likes to make this breakfast hash. And so I knew that those hash browns had gone bad. And I went over and I put my hand in the bag, and it was all, you know, slimy and it smelled.
And, okay, got it.
And so he was dumping all this in, and he had a bunch of onion, and he was just building this creation. And I said, oh, babe, I said, those hash browns are bad. And he doesn't have a good sense of smell, so he couldn't smell it. And I was like, no, Greg, those are bad. You can't use those. And then I said, are you going to put that much onion in what you're making? That's a lot of onion. And so he looked at me and he said, honey, if you want to ever see me make dinner again, you're going to need to encourage me instead of criticize me. And I was like, total. I want you to make dinner again.
But I want to be able to eat it.
That's right. I don't want food poisoning.
There's two parts to this, right?
Yeah.
Making it's great, but it's got to be edible.
It's got to be edible. And so we have to be careful around those things that when we see him doing what we desire in our marriage from him, you know, to notice that and to affirm him.
So roll back. What could you have done differently in that situation?
I could have, you know, well, I don't know what I would have done differently around the hash browns. They were flat
I think
out.
That's, I mean, we're all accepting of that.
Yeah. Yes. Apart from the hash browns.
Yeah, I could have gone with an affirmation first. Mm.
This is great. You're making dinner. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Wow. You know, that's awesome. You're surprising me with dinner.
You Can know, I get you just, some fresh hash browns?
And actually, I went out in the garage and I got a potato and I put it in the food processor and I made our own hash browns. So it all worked out.
Yeah, that is good. But a great example of how to do that. Respect for leadership. This is probably one of the areas where women struggle the most. Here at Focus on the Family, we hear from you about the struggle here where your husband's just not taking the lead. And you thought when you got married, he would do the Bible studies. He would spur you on to greater things. I'm just assuming. And, you know, again, men can be very passive. First, let's talk about that dynamic, the general dynamic of men and passivity. Who wants to take that on? And then we'll move to the leadership question.
Well, I'll kind of toss a question maybe a little your way. I feel that I have a lot of friends that out-earn their husband and in many ways kind of out-spiritualize their husband. They're more involved in Bible studies. They're the ones that are excited about family devotionals. So as far as a lot of these Christian ideals of ways that a husband would be leading, they don't necessarily see it. And so it's hard to feel that sort of respect towards their husbands. Mm-hmm. If you're out-earning and you're out-spiritualizing and if you're, you know, kind of in some ways out-parenting or out-doing, it's hard to see, I guess, where they are leading sometime. Mm-hmm. So, and, you know, a lot of my friends are a lot more, I guess, maybe a little more type A or, you know, big personality women and maybe married to more laid-back men. So kind of, I guess, what is that balance?
I would say, first and foremost, I don't see how it's going to go well when we're competing in our own marriage. Mm-hmm. Often we desire for our husbands to lead like we would lead. So our strengths, we expect them to have the same strengths in their leadership. And that's not always the case. Again, we're often marrying our opposite. And for Greg and I, Greg is much more laid back, and his personality is more just even keel than mine. And so he wouldn't lead like me. I'm hard charging. I'm competitive. I have lots of energy.
This is why we're friends.
Greg is different than me. And so
that's
often,
why we're friends.
Yes. And often we just expect them that they're going to lead like our personality would lead. And instead it's looking at their personality and looking at their strengths and seeing, you know, what is it? How would he lead? And how can we encourage him to lead? I can honestly say the number one thing I wish I would have done differently early on in our marriage was given him more grace. And allowed him to make more mistakes. It's because you learn through your mistakes. And, you know, and have encouraged him more in how he was leading. He was trying. He was 23 years old. He didn't know how to be a great leader to me, how to lead me, a stronger woman. And so it's just stepping back, giving yourself grace and extending God's grace to him.
You were talking about the importance of encouraging. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, what is the balance between encouraging and nagging? Like, like, how do you encourage in a way that sounds like encouragement to kind of inspire them to improve? I mean, except
I hear
they
the
are,
word manipulation but like, here, but
well, no, but I'm just wondering, you know, like, what does the language, I guess, sound like where it's encouraging but not nagging if you do see something that maybe could be done better or actually would be better for them?
Do you have an example, Eva? That might help.
No,
what I would say is that your goal is encouraging him to grow. And he's encouraging me to grow. We're sharpening each other. And so there's nothing wrong with sitting down and having an honest conversation about something you're wishing he would do, but do it in a way that can be received. You know, give yourself the greatest chance of being heard. And so instead of being accusatory and critical and escalating, you know, wait until you're in a time where you're just talking or ask him, you know, when would be a good time to talk about this? I have some feedback.
Well, that's so good. Mm-hmm. Let's turn to the gallery. Let's ask them to give their first name only for anonymity and then ask your question. So let's go there now. The first question.
Hello, my name is Ben. I'm one of the few men in the audience right now.
How you feeling, Ben?
Overwhelmed? Slightly, yes. Towing the line. I am recently married to a very strong type A personality. I would describe myself as a strong type B. Not to brag, no one watches Netflix like me. No one. And as you were just talking about both of you being type A personalities dealing with passivity of men, what advice do you have for two young newlyweds about how, well, me in particular, how should I lead my wife in a way that's not just becoming something that I'm not?
That's a great question.
That is a great question. Yeah. And I love that you're asking this question early on. I wish I would have asked this question early on. Mm. And how can we do this in a way that allows room for both of us in the marriage? There has to be space for both of our strengths, our growth areas, our personalities, you know, have some great conversations around that. You know, have a mentor couple that can step in and really, you know, get to know you and watch what is going well and what suggestions they have for you. I know Greg and I had that 2 years into our marriage. Someone stepped in. We were miserable. We were struggling. And to have another couple step in and say, we can tell you guys are miserable. That didn't feel so good, but it really just their advice and their love and them walking with us through those difficult years made all the difference.
Let's go to the next question.
Hi, my name is Megan, and my husband and I have been married 25 years. And I would say he is a strong spiritual leader. He's always in God's word. He just loves the Lord. He's very passionate. And I would say that we're sort of equally, you know, together in that. However, when I first became a Christian and kind of was around other marriages, I really kind of developed this ideal as to what a Christian wife was supposed to be. And unfortunately, a lot of my own baggage from growing up and feeling very much like I didn't have a voice, I kind of spiritualized that and made that into, I guess my question is, you know, how can we encourage younger wives who have sort of this ideal to kind of understand that it's not really a Christian thing to not bring up what you're really feeling and thinking, that's not really pulling you towards intimacy with your husband.
Yeah, that's a great question.
That is so good. You know, I think one of the cultural beliefs that we have developed within the Christian faith is that submission is being silent. And that is just so far from the truth. You know, God brought me with my uniquenesses and my personality, and I do have lots of thoughts and opinions. And he brought me together with Greg. And us coming together then, it's not me being silent. Him leading doesn't mean that he, you know, he makes all the decisions and that it's all about his ideas. It's coming, a good leader pulls on his resources, and a good helpmate is offering her strengths.
Yeah.
Yeah. And her perspective. And what's great about Megan's question is that she recognizes that she carried some of this into their relationship. And that's why we start with chapter one, being a healthy wife, mm-hmm. that we have to be willing to look at what are we bringing? What part of this is mine? And often we want to talk about what part is our husband's. And, you know, we can go in, get counseling, talk to a mentor, and really seek out what is it that I brought? What wounds did I bring in? And what, you know, difficulties did I bring in?
Sure.
And challenges. And get help and get healing. Yeah.
All right, let's go to the next question.
Hi, my name's Renee. And I have a question about today's culture and masculinity. That women are strong, and that we both have talked, both women's, about them being strong and their husbands being softer. But how do we encourage our men to be masculine and to be the leaders of their family?
Mm-hmm. That's such a good question, Renee. I would say that first and foremost, because being aware that I am a stronger woman, and Eva, you said the same, that we need to step back and recognize, are we allowing them to lead? And often I wasn't. I was stepping in and doing it. If he wasn't doing it, if he was slower to do it, I would just take over. Mm-hmm. And do it myself. And honestly, what I've learned is to step back and submit to the Lord. And really, it's a state of my heart. It's a softness of my heart to see that I want to encourage him to be that strong man, and to point out the things I see him doing as he's learning to lead. 25 years later, we are both still in the growth process.
Yeah.
And learning, how do we do this thing called marriage, and how do we do it well?
And I think you're picking up the baton from a mom. What I mean by that is, when you get married, that man, that husband, should be somewhat already oriented toward leading and those kinds of things. And moms have a powerful role in the culture to encourage their boys to mm-hmm. become men as well. Let's end on the right high note. In your book, you also mention how to rebuild that friendship with your mm-hmm. spouse, with your husband. Touch on things that you need to be mindful of to rebuild and have a more joyful relationship with your spouse.
Well, you think about, a marriage is built typically, unless it's an arranged marriage and you don't know this man, typically you're friends at some point. You know, you start with a friendship. And often through the busyness and the chaos, I know, Eva, you would agree with this.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to be spontaneous and fun and playful when yeah. there's a lot of stress.
And we're spread so thin that often we have the friendship fade. And, you know, then the friendship kind of takes the back seat. But I wanted to encourage women, rebuild that friendship with your husband, you know. And what that means is making sure that you're not overcommitted, that you leave time for spontaneity and leave time to go on a walk with, even with the kids, or watch a movie or watch a football game, you know, whatever it is that you used to do, return to the things you used to do. And, you know, that one of the things that gets in the way of that is technology, and that our eyes are always down on our phones. Set the phone aside. I am so guilty of this, but set the phone aside and give that time. Give your first fruits to your husband.
Aaron and Eva, this has been so good. It's been playful, but it's also been full of great nuggets. Those questions were wonderful. I think your answers were equally wonderful. I'm just proud of both of you. Thank you for being here today and helping women better understand how to improve their relationship with their husband. I think this is long overdue. And I do commit, at some point, we will address the other end of this equation, because I know some women are saying, listen, I'm doing it right. We'll get to that. Maybe we'll have Greg come in and defend men.
He needs to write his own book.
Yeah, yes, exactly. But we can do that, because there's lots of things that we need to do as well. So we'll come back to that at some time in the future.
On behalf of Jim Daly and the entire team, thanks for listening to Focus on the Family. I'm John Fuller.
Erin mentioned that the foremost indication of the marriages that were happy, according to a study done some years ago, was that the wife affirmed her husband. And you know, Graham has said on many occasions that he appreciates it so much when I affirm him. So I have firsthand knowledge that this is true. I really appreciate what Erin and Eva have shared today to help wives figure out how to build up their husbands in ways that make him feel encouraged and respected. In her book, 10 Things a Husband Needs from His Wife, Erin Smalley says that as you learn how to show your husband love in everyday ways, you'll make room in your marriage for deeper connection and lasting satisfaction. The joy you used to dream of finding someday can be yours today as you invest in a fulfilling marriage. You can find your copy of the book online at safamily.co.za or give us a call on 031-716-3300. You know, the only way we can keep helping families is with your prayers and financial support. Focus on the Family is your ministry, and your gift allows us to deliver biblically based teaching through this broadcast and other programs and online resources, counseling, the books and other tools, as well as the work we do with orphans and vulnerable children. When you give to Focus on the Family, you're giving the gift of family, which has an immediate and I think eternal impact. So would you consider giving a gift towards our Give the Gift of Family campaign? You can do that when you click donate on our website or give us a call on 031-716-3300. I'm so glad that you could join us today for Focus on the Family Africa. I'm Alison Schnell, inviting you back next time when we'll once again help you and your family thrive in Christ.